Thunderpants!
What are you laughing at?
Laffy Taffy. They have a funny joke on every wrapper, and I love how fruity they are. Banana's my favorite. Want one?
Sure. Mmm, so smooth and creamy.
I like to eat them after school and after dinner and after...
Whenever you need a good LOL?
Yeah! So, here's the joke. What do clouds wear under their shorts?
Thunderpants. That is good.
Laffy Taffy. Deliciously funny. Head to LaffyTaffy.com to shop now.
Hear that? It's the sound of someone whacking the ground with a rake. Specifically, they're beating around the bush, which we've done enough of in this ad too, so let's get right to it. The new Moneymaker scratch-off from the Ohio Lottery doesn't beat around the bush. Moneymaker. Play the game and you could win money. Up to $2 million. With more than $88 million in prizes, ranging from $50 to $500, Moneymaker cuts right to the cash. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
The Unofficial Bengals Podcast.
Welcome to the Unofficial Bengals Podcast. This is your host, Frank LaPlaca, and I'm a Bengals fan for life. All right, in this episode, we're going to review the 2024 NFL Draft, and we're going to go over each pick by the Bengals. We'll analyze the player and the impact that they're going to have on the roster.
This is Zaire Johnson, and you are listening to the Unofficial Bengals Podcast.
Cincinnati Bengals fans, I would like to introduce Frank LaPlaca.
All right, I'm here. I made it through 15-plus hours of draft coverage. There was a couple porterhouses, a massive roast beef sandwich, a couple dozen chicken wings, even a case of Corona beer, lots of proteins, lots of carbs. That's what it takes to make it through this grueling yet enjoyable draft. I just made a list of some random musings during the draft. You had Houshmandzadeh introducing the Bengals' third-round pick and shouting out Bengal Jim. That was a cool moment. You know, they have highlights on every player. Just get you all pumped up for the draft picks. Get you to know these guys. Charles Davis, amazing. Daniel Jeremiah, amazing. You had the puppies out. You had the stump the truck, which they get so high on at the NFL Network. I'm a little lukewarm on it, but whatever. You saw the NFL increase its international presence or its international marketing with all the picks from Germany and Mexico and overseas. So, you know, that's the master plan of the NFL is world domination. You know, they've already dominated the U.S., and now it's time to take on the world. And in my opinion, it is the greatest sport and greatest game in the world. Rich Eisen, a little hot and cold. There were times where his energy was up and he was the funny, great Rich Eisen. And there were times when he was a little bit down and just kind of mellow and like monotonely serious. It was a strange weekend for him. Wondering why Goodell only does the first day. This is the hugest event in the NFL's offseason. Why not dedicate all 3 days and be there for all 3 days and announce all the picks? Because that Dawn Aponte, no disrespect, she acted like she was annoyed that she was there. And you have all these picks. You have all these ex-players. You have all these fans that would love to do it. I think after you get past the first couple rounds, you should have a guest introducing almost every pick, you know, because those people, it would really mean something to them. Whereas, like I said, with Dawn Aponte, she could care less, and Goodell wasn't there, whatever. I'm not going to complain about these things, just random musings from watching 15 hours of the draft. I'm allowed to vent. And then the rowdy Bengal fan announcing the Cedric Johnson pick. It was great. He refers to Joe Shiesty and the best quarterback in the league, and the Bengals are going to take the Super Bowl and get that ring. So that was really cool. You know, when you watch 15 hours of it, you're invested in all of it. So those are my random takes from 3 days of the draft. Okay, so before we get into the Bengals picks, let's talk about what our divisional rivals did very briefly. So the Steelers had a top-rated draft, unfortunately, and that's good when you're picking in the 20s. What did they do? They remade their whole offensive line, a center and two guards, all of them with a chance to start. They also drafted a playmaking linebacker and a very good wide receiver, amongst some other players. So Steelers, unfortunately, did a pretty good job this year. Browns, the Deshaun Watson effect is still killing them. They didn't have a first rounder. They didn't have a fourth. I don't know if that was because of Watson or other circumstances. But basically in the top 100 or so, they had two picks. And they took a defensive lineman and a guard. Later in the draft, they took a bunch of defensive players. They had a well-rated draft, but they just didn't get a lot of those top 50, top 100 players, which are the players, as we've seen through the research and as time goes by, those are the players that matter most. Ravens drafted well as usual, got a top-notch corner in round one, a tackle, an edge, wide receiver. Those are their first four picks. Still chasing a wide receiver over there in Baltimore. I hope you keep chasing them. They also picked up a quarterback and a running back. Now on to the Bengals. I have to say, and I'm not hanging on the rim, I just love this team and I know this team. And that's why I do the podcast, because I've been following this team with all of my heart for decades. Again, I hate dating myself and saying how long, but it's, you know, it was since the Ken Anderson days. I don't look it, I don't sound it, I don't act it. But yes, it's been that long, and I really do have my hand on the pulse of what the Bengals do as an organization, and it came true in what they drafted. And again, I don't claim to be a college expert. I don't know the players. I don't follow the game. But I do claim to know a lot about the Bengals and what I think they would do and should do. And if you go back to the last episode where I made my predictions, here, I'm just going to grab them real quick. I just want to talk about the first four rounds. I said offensive tackle in the first. That's what they did. I said corner in the second, and they went defensive tackle. So I did get that one wrong. But then I got third round wide receiver. Got it. Third round defensive tackle / nose tackle type. Did that. Fourth round tight end. So there it is. 4 out of 5 for the Unofficial Bengals podcast. Hanging on the rim, I guess. I'm just proud of it. I haven't really put that out there on social media, but I am pretty proud that I did that. You know, you go to the later rounds, and it's a gamble. You don't know what anyone's going to grab. It's more best player available. So I wasn't as accurate with those last five picks. But those first five, I was on because I know this team. I love this team. I know what we need. I know what the Bengals need. I know how the Bengals draft, too. But that's enough of that. Let's talk about actually how the draft went. So you see the first round going, all these offensive players going, all the quarterbacks going, which makes our pick even more valuable at 18. And when Latham went early in the draft, I was like, you know, the Bengals are going to grab a defensive tackle here. They're going to get Byron Murphy, or, you know, they're going to get one of the top two guys here. And when we picked at 18, there were so many defensive players available. Well, the only guys that were off the board were two defensive ends and a defensive tackle. So we had our choice of everything. We had our choice. We could have got the third best edge, the second best defensive tackle, and the first best at all the other defensive positions. On offense, you were looking at maybe like the fifth tackle off the board. You know, that was where we went. And I don't care if it's the fifth tackle versus the first corner. We went with, I'm not going to say it was best player available, but it was best player available for our needs. And the Bengals picked an offensive tackle. And when you have Joe Burrow there, that is the franchise. And that's going to do more for us, is protecting him, letting that guy be upright for a season, and watch what happens when he's healthy and can play all 17 games and into the playoffs. And getting a tackle is going to add to that. We'll talk about the impact of Amarius Mims on the roster in just a little bit. But I was all for them grabbing a tackle, especially in a tackle-rich draft. You can't just sleep on it. And, you know, this is one time maybe it's not best player available. This is like, get your tackle. He's highly rated. And you go from there and you protect your franchise. And I think the Bengals did an excellent job in doing so. So the Bengals stuck with all 10 of their picks, no trades. So we just stood pat. I know they were trying to trade up in the second round, and it wasn't really materializing. I'm sure we got trade offers from other teams to trade down and move around the board. We didn't take them. We just stuck to our board, stuck to our picks. And it seems like the Bengals got the players that they wanted, got the players that they believed in, and got players that are going to improve this roster. And you think about two defensive tackles early. It's because we went 1-5 in the division. And you're looking now at Henry and Chubb and Najee Harris and Warren and the rest of the running backs in our division. Going 1-5 in your division, that's what they say. Teams draft to compete in their division, right? Teams that have high-flying quarterbacks and wide receiver duos, you see the other teams drafting corners, you know, like the Ravens did this year. They have to worry about Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. And when you have teams that we're going against, like the Browns, a run-first team, the Steelers, a run-first team, the Ravens, a run-first team, you have to fortify that defensive line. That's what we did with those two picks. So our division dictated taking two tackles within the first three rounds. Two defensive tackles, that is. And as I said last episode, we addressed the position groups that were deficient. You don't have to be a rocket scientist or Nostradamus or Mel Kiper to know that we needed some tight ends. We needed a pure nose tackle. We needed some more corners in the room. So those things were obvious, and that's what we did in the draft. And we picked up players at all three of those positions and other positions, of course, where we either had a best player available or a need, like getting another tackle in the building. I think the Bengals were also looking at running backs in those middle rounds, but there was a big run on them, and by the time we picked, it felt like a lot of the good ones were gone, so we didn't end up seeing a value pick there in the draft. We ended up picking up two undrafted free agents after the draft. That also goes with punter. I know there was one punter grabbed, I think in the fourth round, which is pretty early. We were looking at one. We didn't do anything in the draft, so obviously the guy that we wanted wasn't there, and then we went after the draft and signed an undrafted free agent at that position as well. So in total, we took five offensive players, five defensive players. I like that breakdown. You had 10 guys to draft. You split it right down the middle. We had three skill position players on offense and two linemen. And we had two secondary players on defense and three linemen. So out of the 10 picks, split evenly between offense and defense, and five of those 10 picks were picks that are guys that are going to play in the trenches. And we all know that's one of the biggest factors in winning and losing championships. We took three injured players for the first time in a while. I'm never crazy about that. I like the Mims pick. And if those two tight ends work out, then this is all moot. But I don't like taking players that are injured right out of the draft. Like, we learned that with Agboihe, Billy Price, Khalid Kareem. There was a couple guys over the years that came out injured and just never panned out. But again, we're going to cross our fingers. We really haven't done anything since 2020 as far as drafting injured players, except maybe, like I said, Kareem. So you have Mims with the high ankle sprain, and then he pulled a hamstring at the combine. High ankle sprain, that happens. That doesn't mean you're injury prone. That's something that you can heal from. Very painful, takes a very long time to heal, but he'll be fine by the start of training camp, obviously. The hamstring, I look at it two ways. When guys pull a hamstring, I'm like, man, you need to be more stretched out and hydrated. This is your life. You can't be pulling hamstrings. You know, that's one side of it, and that part is true. In Mims' case, he's at the combine. He's known for being a fast offensive tackle. He was trying to probably put together a really good 40 time to improve his draft stock and just, you know, get his name out there. And that's probably why he popped his hamstring. But again, if you're stretching and hydrating, especially when you're in your early 20s, you shouldn't have any hamstring issues. And then you go on to Eric Aull, the tight end. He had a herniated disc in his back a couple years ago, and then he tore his ACL in October. So you look at that, and he's probably not going to be ready to go until July, August, not really full-blown until maybe September or so. So he may turn into a pick that we're not relying on right away, and that's maybe someone that you put on the PUP list, and you have a few extra weeks, you can carry another person there. Because the tight end room all of a sudden got crowded. You know, you have three guys there. Obviously, Gesicki's going to be the one. Tanner Hudson's going to be the two. Sample is going to be your blocking tight end. They're talking about moving him to running back, meaning fullback. Now, if you do that, then you're looking at maybe Chris Evans not being on the roster. And, you know, there's a lot of play there. We have so much time to weed all that stuff out. But the fact is that maybe you can carry four tight ends with Eric Aull on the physically unable to perform list. And then you go to Tanner McLaughlin. They said he had core surgery in the offseason. I don't know what that means. I know it can't be fun. That's, you know, your major body part. What do they say when you're entering a training program, right? You want to strengthen your core. And that's one of the things when Burrow had the appendectomy years ago. You know, it was affecting his core, affecting his strength. First couple games out, he's not pushing the ball downfield like he can. So I don't know what kind of impact that's going to have on Tanner McLaughlin. But we got these guys at value picks, right? Both Aull and McLaughlin were designated to go higher than the rounds that they did. But because of the injury, we were able to get them later. Hopefully that pans out for us. Truthfully, though, I'm not a fan of doing that. I just stay away from the injured players. I mean, you get these guys in their early 20s and make sure they're healthy and sound. And then going back to my predictions, where I got those top five right, except for the second round, which I was saying corner, we took the defensive tackle, and I think Chris Jenkins is going to be phenomenal for us. I have no arguments with that pick. One of the reasons, I think the Bengals may have gone corner, but there was also a big run on corners in that early second round because of the lack of defensive players that were drafted in the first round. All right, before we go into the draft picks of the Cincinnati Bengals, let's talk about the undrafteds. And I'm not going to rattle off a bunch of names and colleges and everything. It's just going to get too convoluted. So we picked up 14 undrafteds right now, and I'm just going to talk about positions. So they grabbed a quarterback, two running backs, and again, that's because we couldn't get him in the draft, and you can get undrafted running backs that are productive. We know that. Two wide receivers, because there's a plethora of college wide receivers. You never know. You know, you can get a Hushmanzada in the seventh round. They picked up another tight end. You know what? Why not? Because you have your top three. What if the two guys that we drafted this year aren't ready to go? Maybe this undrafted becomes a fourth tight end. They picked up another offensive tackle. You can never have too many of them, and you can never stop rolling the dice that you're going to have, you know, a really good player there. Worth picking that up. On the defensive side of the ball, they picked up an edge, two linebackers. That's another thing the Bengals like to do in undrafteds. You know, think of Vontaze Burfict, Vinnie Ray, you know, guys like that in the past that we've had success with. So, you know, like running backs and linebackers, I think, are the two main positions that you want to go for in the undrafteds. The Bengals took two of each there. So good job by them. We also took a corner. Why not add a few more bodies to that room? You just never know. Alan George turned out to be decent. You know, he's going to be fighting for his roster life. I remember, you know, in his first year in the league, he had a couple productive starts for us. And then we picked up two safeties because, again, you want to load up that room and get your best available players out there. And Dax Hill, it looks like, is going to move to corner. And I guess this is as good a time to talk about that as ever. I like it, but I'm worried about it because when you have a first-round pick that you can't solidify a position for, it's a little bit of a red flag. I thought he played well at safety last year. I know there was a lot of, you know, there was some miscommunications and a lot of, you know, over 30-yard plays downfield, stuff like that. So that does go on the safeties. But I thought he made a big jump, and I was like, you know, let this guy develop, and he can be that free safety. You know, I saw elements of Jesse Bates in there, ball hawking. What I always say about him, going from center field to the sidelines as quick as anybody in the league. So those are all very strong things that he did at the safety position. There's a lot of pundits out there, a lot of fans out there, and it appears within the organization as well, that maybe everyone doesn't think he did as good of a job at safety as I did, and now they're going to move him to corner. And he played some slot in college, so that's his natural position, but there's even talk about putting him on the outside because of his running ability, and they really like his coverage ability. I was just liking the idea of having him as a wild card and having him as that third safety where you could put him in the box, you could put him in coverage, you could put him in the slot. You know, in four or five wide receiver sets, he comes in handy. But I don't know if they're going to use him that way. It looks like he's going to be more of a pure corner, at least as of this recording. That's what I'm hearing. And the last of the undrafteds, to go back to that, is we picked up a punter. So we did get that punter to compete with Brad Robbins, and don't think they might not pick up a veteran punter as well. We're going to go into the season making sure that that position is solidified. So the only two things that we didn't take as undrafteds were the interior lines. We didn't take any guards or centers as undrafted, and we didn't take any defensive tackles. But the fact that we had seven DTs on the roster and we drafted two more, I think we're pretty set there, and we're also pretty loaded at guard and swing players. You know, your Jackson Carmans and Cody Fords are kind of going down as tackles, but they can both switch to guard. You have centers that can play guard, so makes sense. No guards, no DTs in undrafteds, but every other position, and that's what I feel teams should do every year. You should fill every position group with those undrafteds, unless you have an absolute overflow. The Bengals did just that, and I'm believing in Mr. Tobin, Mr. Brown, and Coach Taylor. All right, so it's that time in the show to talk about the 10 players that the Bengals drafted and their impact on the roster, the other players, the position groups, who has a chance to start, who has a chance to contribute, who has an uphill climb to make the roster.
The last thing you want to hear when you need your auto insurance most is,
thank you for calling. Please listen to your list of 46 possible service options.
Which is why when you choose USAA auto insurance, you'll get great service that is easy and reliable. 24/7 online service for claims, access to roadside assistance, and more. All at the touch of a button. Start getting the service you deserve. Get a quote today. USAA. Ability to receive a quote depends on membership eligibility. Membership eligibility and product restrictions apply and are subject to change. USAA means United Services Automobile Association and its affiliates, San Antonio, Texas.
Round 1, Amarius Mims, tackle, Georgia.
All right, so Mims comes in at 6'8", 340, kind of the same dimensions as Trent Brown and Orlando Brown. Orlando Brown's already saying how much more muscular and athletic the rookie is than himself. I like that selflessness. You know, it says a lot about someone when you can compliment other people, right? Like, so many people out there, they're competitive. They don't want to give anyone the edge because inside they're, like, competing with everybody. But you know when someone's really secure in themselves, when they can dish out compliments to other people because they're not in competition with other people. You know, I kind of feel that's the way I am. I just kind of live my life, do my thing. I'm not jealous of anybody. I don't want what this guy wants. I don't want to be like anybody. But the reality is you have someone that's secure in himself, like an Orlando Brown, and that also brings in the element that he's going to help bring along Mims and help teach him and not be competitive with him. And that's exactly what Mims needs. He was outstanding when he played, but he only had 8 starts because of injury and a little bit of a slow bloomer, I guess. Massive wingspan, and that's that arm length, right? They always said that about Jonah Williams. He's got short arms, and who knows if that was the real reason why he didn't pan out. But now we got a guy with long arms, so there's no physical excuse there. And Mims is very athletic. The good part is we can bring him along gradually as long as there's no injuries. He can sit behind the Browns this year and learn the game and learn how to be a pro and learn how to train and prepare and get in the playbook and get a feel for the other guys on the roster. I think, you know, and if someone goes down, which is almost inevitable, it happens all the time, then he's probably the first tackle off the bench, as opposed to Jackson Carman or Cody Ford. Mims has the chance to learn behind 2 veteran, successful Super Bowl champion tackles. It can't be a better situation for him. And where I think we're going to see him to start, providing there's no injuries and he's forced into the lineup, I think you're going to see him as that 6th offensive lineman. You know, the guy who comes in the tight end position, in the goal line packages or in various packages, and at least for starters, and I think that's a great role. We saw Cody Ford in that role last year, but maybe you just keep Ford as the backup and you keep Mims as that 6th guy, get him some game experience. You're probably going to see him blocking on extra points and field goals. You know, why not? Any opportunity to get him in there is a good opportunity, and I think it's a phenomenal pick as long as he stays healthy and plays up to his physical expectations. You have a dynamite player there, and think about the long term. We don't know what's going to happen with Trent Brown. I hope he has a phenomenal year. I hope he has such a phenomenal year they bring him back for another year or two. But if not, you put Mims in there, and if he pans out, you have Orlando Brown and Mims for the next few years protecting Joe Burrow. Tackle is a premium position, and by taking one first in the draft with this much upside, if he pans out, you're going to be in good shape. So in my opinion, an excellent pick by the Bengals. You're building for the future. You're also giving Joe Burrow the word that, hey, all we care about is protecting you. You know, we're not going for a defensive tackle or a top flight corner or even another wide receiver. Our goal is to keep you healthy, and that's a good message to send to potentially the best player in the NFL.
Round 2, Chris Jenkins, defensive tackle, Michigan.
All right, so Chris Jenkins, 6'2", 299, built like a run defender. And from some of the things I read, they said that he was the best run-stopping defensive tackle in the draft. That's exactly what we need. He comes from the bloodline of Cullen Jenkins and Chris Jenkins, so his uncle and father both played in the NFL. You know, sometimes that stuff carries through, and you know, you learn from watching an NFL player's life your whole life. And being that you're the genetic offspring of them, you were built with a body that's capable of going into the NFL. That's exactly what we're seeing here. He was the top defender on the National Championship College team. He was a captain there. He played 40 games. They nicknamed him the Mutant. So whenever you have a nickname like that, I mean, Javon Kearse was called the Freak. Now we have Chris Jenkins, the Mutant. So I think we got ourselves a good player here. And again, the priority for us to win this division is stopping the run better than we have over the last year. And you have to fill that void left by DJ Reader. Now, Jenkins is another 3 technique, so we're loaded with them right now. BJ Hill, Sheldon Rankins, Zach Carter's a 3 technique, and now Chris Jenkins. You have 4 guys that are all, you know, not the nose tackle type, but the, you know, more of the pass rushing all around defensive tackle. So what does it mean for the roster? The roster's getting full at that position now. I mean, we had 7 guys, you know, 3 of them like your Dominique Davis's, guys like that, Travis Bell. Those are guys that are a long shot to make the active roster, you know, unfortunately for them. But you have BJ Hill and Rankins who are going to be in there all the time. Now you have Jenkins to rotate in there. Zach Carter It's going to be a little tougher for him to make the team, especially because we drafted another nose tackle in the third round. So that room is getting crowded. If they keep four, you might not see Carter back. If they keep five, he'll be the fifth there. But now, good problems to have. Defensive tackle is such an important low-key position. We've seen in years past when you get thin there, you're in trouble, and you can't be pulling guys off the street and thinking you're going to make a playoff run. So we have set ourselves up with two outstanding NFL pros, two high draft picks there, and Zach Carter was a third pick, and, you know, coming along, not as fast as I would have liked, but now you have five guys there that are all pretty highly rated, and it looks like you're going to be set at that position, and that's a good thing to be set at. You know, you want to build the trenches, especially in the AFC North.
Round three, Jermaine Burton, wide receiver, Alabama.
All right, so Jermaine Burton, 4.45 at the combine, not slight a frame, like he's a deep threat, but he's 6'1", 196. That's only a few pounds lighter than Chase, so well put together. He can play the slot, but he's not really known as a slot guy, and that's what we all thought, right? Oh, the Bengals drafted a third-round wide receiver who can go down the field. You're thinking that's going to be a Tyler Boyd replacement, but no, it's more of an outside guy. But if you're good enough at receiver, like I said, I think you could play everywhere. 18 yards per catch, which is really good. 50 SEC games in his career. The knock on him was that I guess they said he's immature and he's emotional. You can't be immature on this Bengals team. You think Hendrickson's going to let you be immature? He's going to get in your face and probably threaten you. You think you're going to be immature in front of Chase and Higgins, two veteran, established, cool receivers? If you're immature or a diva, those guys are going to run you out of the room. They're going to make fun of you. So I think Burton, if that was a problem, he realizes, look, I'm with Joe Burrow and two of the best receivers in the game. This is my opportunity to really make an impact in this league and shine. So hopefully that's enough to, you know, put any of those concerns behind us. And if not, the Bengals will right those wrongs very quickly. And, you know, the immaturity and the emotion, they go hand in hand. Sometimes you just get too intense and it comes across as immature. We'll see what happens. I don't even want to delve into that because I don't think it's going to be a factor. And he was trained by TJ Houshmandzadeh, which is also a good thing because he knows how to be a pro, and another guy just ultra cool, and he's not going to let this guy do the wrong things. So what do we have here? We have a guy threatening to be the third wide receiver. I mean, Irwin's got skins on the wall, and he's a great player. Yosivash was breaking out last year. They have high expectations for Charlie Jones. Obviously, you have Higgins and Chase as your main guys. But I don't know. Is this guy going to be in there as in four wide receiver sets? Maybe is it going to be Irwin and Yosivash in there as when there's three? And then when you're bringing in four, you put Burton on the outside, send him all the way downfield, one-on-one coverage. You know, you're looking at 60-yard touchdowns. I'm not sure exactly how it's going to pan out. It's going to come down to training camp battles and who legitimately wins that number three job. But we have a guy who's fast, young, accomplished. They say a first-round talent, but everyone who you draft, any team, everyone's always saying how the guy should have went higher for the most part, right? So first-round talent in Burton, who knows what that really means. I mean, he did play for Alabama, SEC, very productive. Regardless, he's going to be heavily in that mix, and that's going to make it tougher on your practice squatters from last year, like your Kendrick Pryors and your Shed Jacksons, guys like that. It's going to be a little bit tougher for them because now you have basically six wide receivers that are locks to make the team.
Round three, McKinley Jackson, defensive tackle, Texas A&M.
All right, so McKinley Jackson is that nose tackle type. Think about a body frame like this, 6'1", 326. That's someone who could be very stout against the run, as he was in college. And they said he had pretty good push-up field for a guy that size, so maybe he can contribute a little bit on the later downs, but you're probably going to see him mostly on first and second downs. Run-stopping nose tackle, captain, played 40 games. From what I read about him, he's got that lunch pail mentality, like nothing is beneath him. He'll do anything it takes to be great and to win, and that's a great mentality. That's a guy you want in your room. As far as the impact on the roster, he's probably a lock to make it. I think both of the defensive tackles are, but he has no competition at nose tackle. Everyone else is a three. He's the only one technique, aside from Dominique Davis. So it's looking pretty good for McKinley Jackson. Hopefully he's in that rotation and you have younger defensive tackles combined with veterans, all productive players. I'm really excited about that position.
Round 4, Eric Aull, tight end, Iowa.
So Eric Aull, a Cincy local. He was a captain too at Michigan before he transferred. Good route runner, excellent receiver. They said he can block. It's the injury things that we're going to be worried about. I think he's a candidate, as I said at the top of the show, for someone who's going to start the season on the PUP list. That way we don't have to worry about exposing someone by putting him on the practice squad or just flat out cutting someone. And you have to think about the tight end position long term. Right? We have two guys this year that we drafted that probably aren't going to be ready to start and maybe not even totally healed from injuries. But you have Gesicki and Tanner Hudson on one-year deals. So you have a lot of flexibility there. You can see how Gesicki and Hudson perform this year. If they perform well, you re-sign them. If they don't perform well, then maybe you have rookies that you can start plugging in place and, you know, eventually you achieve that tight end mix. So again, that went from a room that was pretty sparse to a room that seems pretty stocked. And I'm hoping both of the guys that we drafted don't have injury problems and become long-term solutions. And, you know, you need tight ends in this game. You see it all over the place. That's what are the Chiefs doing? They're riding a tight end to the Super Bowl. The Lions with Laporta became a totally different team. You know, Joe Burrow has never had that elite tight end, and we're trying to get that for him. I think Gesicki has that ability. But why not take two tight ends that are kind of steals for the rounds that you're going to get them in, guys that can be excellent pass catchers, and see what happens there.
Round 5, Josh Newton, cornerback, Texas Christian University.
So Josh Newton, a physical, versatile corner. He can play everywhere in the secondary, including some safety. 60 games in college. I don't even know that that was possible. We're looking at a 5'10", 190 guy. A captain, and someone who's just going to add depth to that corner room. You know, you have DJ Ivy coming back from injury. We're not sure if he's going to be ready at the start of the season because that injury happened a little bit later in the year. And although you have your top three set, you know, with Britt, Turner, Hilton, and now Dax Hill is probably in that mix as your four. And now, you have Newton competing with Jalen Davis and Alan George, basically, and Ivy. So you have four guys that are probably all in the same stratosphere. They're very high on Newton. They think they got a steal with him as well, and that he could be a potential starter down the road. You can never have enough corners. Guys get hurt there. And I think it was a good idea to grab one as early as we could. We couldn't get one in the second round. It just didn't pan out that way. And then we started filling that wide receiver, defensive tackle, tight end needs that we had. And, you know, corner we let fall a little bit more, but we took someone in the fifth, and we're going to cross our fingers and hope that he can contribute for us.
Round 6, Tanner McLaughlin, tight end, Arizona.
So Tanner McLaughlin, it goes right with the Eric Aull conversation as far as the roster impact. You know, probably one of these guys makes it. The other one is going to go on PUP. But McLaughlin's known for catch radius. He had zero drops this past season. The core surgery is a concern. He's 25 years old. I guess that shows maturity. Still, you come out at 25, you're not an old man, especially at that position. Running back, it's probably a little bit tougher to come out at that age. But a tight end, you could see him easily play into his 30s. So regardless that he's a quote-unquote old draft pick, I'm not worried about that part. What I am worried about is let's hope that he's healthy, and when healthy, he lives up to the hype and the expectations that we're going to have for him.
Round 6, Cedric Johnson, defensive end, Mississippi.
So Cedric Johnson, I like the size of him as a defensive end at 6'3", 260, 40 games in college. Again, we're getting guys that played a ton of games, except our first pick. How weird is that? But everyone else, you're looking at these guys, 40 games, 50 games, 60 games. And he's another one, played a ton. He's versatile. They played him all over that line, but we're probably just going to see him in pass rush situations. You can never have enough edge rushers. You know, you bring in fresh legs late in the game, and they can make a big difference as long as they're competent enough to do so. What does it mean for the roster? You're looking at Osai going down that depth chart. You know, you have Hubbard and Hendrickson. Obviously, Sample's going to be the rotational guy, and Miles Murphy, first-round pick from last year, they're not going to give up on him. So you're looking at Johnson competing with your Joseph Osais and your Jeffrey Gunters, and, you know, out of the three of them, you're probably looking at maybe one of those guys making it, because really, you can't have too many at one position. What do you do? You have four defensive tackles and six ends. I don't know. We almost have too many good defensive tackles to do so. Or do you go 5-5? I mean, these are roster battles that we're going to think about more towards training camp. But, you know, my wheels are turning here. There's going to be some good players that aren't going to make the team or going to be left exposed on the practice squad. So Cedric Johnson has a good chance at making the roster because he can beat out an underachieving Osai. And Gunter was on the practice squad last year, so another guy he could battle with. And maybe if all things go awry, he ends up on the practice squad.
Round 7, Dejon Anthony, safety, Mississippi.
Dejon Anthony, a safety, and this is the kind of safety I wanted. If you're going to add more depth there, you have your, you know, your top 3-4 guys already set. Get a thumper there. Get a guy who could play special teams. Get a guy who can come up in the box and make a big hit. Get a guy who's a little bit of an enforcer in the secondary. And this is the mold that he's in. You know, coming in as a 7th rounder, we're not expecting him to be a starter and an all-pro right away, but you never know. 47 games. He took the hard road. He played a couple years at junior colleges, I think like two, three, four years junior college. And then he climbed up to Ole Miss where he became a leader on that team. So you got a guy who doesn't give up and worked his way up the ladder to, you know, to go from very small programs to a very significant program and be a very significant player there. They're really looking at him to be a special teamer, so he puts pressure on Tyson Anderson. Because it's obviously going to be Von Bell, Geno Stone, Jordan Battle. Those are going to be your top three. Dax Hill possibly swings over there. And now you're looking at Tyson Anderson to be that special teamer or Dejon Anthony to be that special teamer. Because you're probably only going to keep 4 safeties, especially if Dax Hill is going to be able to swing. Now when you're looking at the Anthony versus Tyson Anderson battle, Tyson Anderson's a lot faster. And Tyson Anderson was really coming on last year, but Tyson Anderson, to say his name repeatedly, also has an injury history. So there's your battle, pretty much. Anderson versus Anthony, and you never know if the two undrafteds are going to get in the mix as well.
Round 7, Matt Lee, center, Miami.
So last pick of the 7th round, we bring in Matt Lee, a center from Miami. Another guy started 51 games. They're saying that he has good pass protection, and that's kind of evidenced by 0 sacks in 923 pass blocks since 2022. Those are outstanding numbers, and when your goal is to protect Joe Burrow, if you have a center that can do so, that's worth its weight in gold. I heard he has an electric personality, and he made a good impression on the veterans already. So he's going to end up pushing Trey Hill and Nate Gilliam, and, you know, may the best man win. The only thing I read about Matt Lee that I didn't like was, and, you know, who knows where these reports are coming from, but they're saying excellent in pass protection, but may not hold up against some of the larger, stronger defensive tackles around the league. Take it for what it's worth. I don't know. He's a 7th round pick. We'll learn that very quickly in training camp when he's going against these defensive tackles. We'll know pretty much right there if he has the ability to stick with these immensely strong NFL guys or if he's just not able to. So that's it. 10 new players, a very highly rated draft for us again. The front office just keeps performing. We have guys to protect Joe Burrow. We have guys to work against the run. We got another toy for Burrow to play with and a good wide receiver. We have 2 tight ends that could, you know, boom or bust. We have some special teamers in the making. We threw in an edge rusher. Had a bunch of undrafteds, brought in another punter, brought in another quarterback. It's exciting. I mean, that's 24 new guys on the Bengals. And, you know, if half of them pan out, if a third of them pan out, we're still in very, very good shape. So it's coming. Soon we're going to hear about the schedule release. We're going to hear about OTAs. And then it's going to be upon us so quickly. So stay cool, stay loyal, and I'll catch you guys next week. That'll do it for this episode. I'd like to thank @BengalsHighlights on Instagram, the best page out there. Really cool highlights, really cool music. Definitely something you should check out. Thank you for listening to the Unofficial Bengals Podcast. This is your host, Frank LaPlaca, and I'm a Bengals fan for life.
The Unofficial Bengals Podcast.